The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, watching us on PCTV Select and on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301. Glad you could be here with us this morning. Thursday, August 14th. A little bit soupy out there today. Already it's in the 70s and a little foggy. That fog's going to burn off, I heard. And we're going to have a halfway decent summer day. It's been pretty nice. Can't really beat it. I have had a lot of 90 degree days this year for sure, but sort of getting used to it, I think. And then as soon as you get used to it, it's all gone. Well, we got a great show coming for you today. Howard Herman is going to be here. He is a reporter, sports reporter at the Berkshire Eagle, of course, a friend of the show. And many great conversations with Howard. We're going to talk today about Wacona Park, the Red Sox. If we think they're a playoff team this year, sure, looks like they could be, but you hate to say it. Talking about the NFL ESPN deal and maybe talk a little bit about the upcoming high school football season that's going to be just around the corner, really, when you get to the 14th of August. You're really talking about high school football in very short order. So we'll be talking with Howard Herman about all of that. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today. Berkshire
weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Rest of tonight, mostly cloudy. Patchy fog. Near steady temperature in the mid-60s. Southwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday, mostly sunny. Patchy fog in the morning. Hot with highs in the upper 80s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Thursday night, mostly clear. Lows around 60. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, there you have it, the weather forecast, and should be pretty nice today. I was thinking there might have been some rain in the forecast, but I didn't hear any, so I think we're going to be okay. I had a little bit of rain yesterday. Could use more rain, as a matter of fact. I think we had that period where 2 months' worth, that's all we got was rain, and then all of a sudden it got hot and it got dry, and our lawn started drying out, and so, it's probably time for a little bit of rain. All right, welcome to the show, Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM. Good morning, Howard Herman. How are you, sir?
Good morning. I am here. I made it.
In no less time than it takes to get a coffee and a, what do you got over there, a muffin?
Yes.
All right.
Little breakfast because it's a long morning.
I would imagine, yeah.
Well, no, from here I have to go up to Amherst to go watch football practice.
Okay.
And then I have to come back and then I go home.
Nice.
So it's got up early. Long day.
It does make for a long day, and we appreciate you coming in this time in the morning, thinking that most of the sports reporting is evening, right?
Yeah, well, I got the call out of the bullpen.
Yes, you did. the utility infielder, the pinch runner, if you will.
Yeah, except you signaled wrong. I'm a righty, not a lefty, you have to use the right arm.
Okay. I'll work on that. See, I got to get my sports stuff together, especially to work on today's show. So lots of stuff going on, even though it is the dead of summer, if you will, right? The dog days of summer, which usually means people are only talking about baseball. But then all of a sudden, the thoughts of football start creeping into our heads, right? We start thinking about the fall and other things like that. So,
football, once the exhibition games start, yeah. then it becomes all football all the time.
Yeah.
If you happen to have watched yesterday, I have not watched it yet, and I am not normally a podcast person,
mm-hmm.
but I am going to either watch or listen to the Jason Travis Kelce podcast for this week.
Well, because if you haven't heard, Taylor Swift dropped a new album.
Well, and she was the guest.
Yes,
and she's really, really funny.
Is she really? Yeah.
Yes. I didn't. They played a small segment of it, and I'm paraphrasing it. And she was talking about it, said, I am sure that everybody who's tuning in, you know, just wants more of me in their heads, in their space.
Especially if you came to listen to sports.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's that intermingling now of the two, right? Like, thanks in no small part to Taylor Swift and her relationship.
Well, it is said, and I don't know if this is factual or anecdotal, but the number of women sports fans mm-hmm. who have become NFL fans because of her has grown exponentially.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Because, you know, I said, you know, if watching football is good for Tay-Tay, you know, it's good for the rest of it. It's good for us, too.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, how many more men Taylor Swift fans we have because of that connection.
That is also possible. I could not pick out a Taylor Swift song, you know, if you played it for me right now.
Well, I don't think we have any in the library, being an all classic rock station here, but we may have to do that in the interim.
Well, at some point she'll become a classic, you know.
That's true. Time marches on.
It does, and you know.
But, you know, the podcasting thing you mentioned, you know, I think of radio interviews as podcasting 1.0. Right. I mean, here we are in the morning. We have a scheduled time on a radio station, which happens to also have a nice live stream. So you can listen to this anytime. We also have podcasts of these shows. But really, we're kind of a radio show. But I think of podcasting as not much more than that. A good interview between a couple of people as an audio format for maybe a little bit of a video format. For about a half an hour or an hour, what's the difference?
There is no real difference. The only difference is time.
Yeah,
and I'm not talking about the time of it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about if you and I are to do a podcast, somebody could listen to it like next week.
Sure,
and it might not be relevant next week.
Yeah,
whereas when we are live on the radio, it's immediate. It's live and it's immediate.
Right.
That's the one thing I always think about when I think about podcasts mm-hmm. is, you know, they can be really interesting and quite often, excuse me, they are, but they're also, you know, not instant mm-hmm. like what we're doing.
Right. And there could be things, you know, in today's newspaper, for example, people listening to us on the radio. And of course, I mentioned a newspaper, which is another form of media that maybe, you know, I won't say relegated to an older generation, but I think more people of a certain age group are used to reading things in print versus scrolling through something on their phone for a podcast or social media. I'm pontificating here a little bit, but anyway, well, I guess what I'm saying is that there's a contemporaneous feel to it, right? As we're sitting here live on the radio, any number of things could be happening. We could talk about what's happening today, what happened yesterday, and it will still be relevant at least for a little while.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and it's funny when you talk about, you know, everything changing. I'm a little older than you.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up not here. I grew up with four television stations and AM radio.
Sure.
And I have always felt, and I tell this to people when we talk about the future of my business, it's never going to change. The only thing that really changes is the delivery system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing in this business.
Yeah.
AM begat FM, begat satellite, begat podcasts.
Sure.
It's still radio.
Mm-hmm.
People are reading what I write, maybe on their phones, maybe on their laptops.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still the newspaper.
Right.
It just isn't physical. Although,
right.
as I tell people all the time, I'm a physical newspaper guy because when I have breakfast, sometimes I'm sloppy. And, you know, and if I spill coffee on my newspaper, I get a little spot.
Yeah.
If I spill coffee on my laptop, I need a new laptop.
That's true. Not exactly a one-use thing, right?
No. Yeah.
Well, you know, we still have the paper right here.
We thank you for that.
I'm a paper person all the way back from when I delivered a newspaper, which, again, was, an anachronism to a certain extent. But, it's all the same content, and it's the work that it takes to put that content together. To pull the stories out, right? And you're a story guy. When I read the stuff that you write in The Eagle, it's about people. It's about coaches. It's about players. It's about extraordinary stories. And those things don't write themselves, right? You have to find those, and you have to do the work.
They're changed. That AI is changing that, but that's a whole different discussion.
I don't think it could change the core of it, though. Really, relationships of knowing people. Like, AI is only going to know what someone else published.
Well, AI, the thing I noticed, and you're starting to see some chains doing little wrap-up items in their newspapers via AI.
Mm-hmm.
What you get out of that, at least so far as I've been able to tell, is the basic nuts and bolts. If you're talking about a baseball game, mm-hmm. who was the winning pitcher? Who had the most hits?
Yep.
When did they score their runs? What you don't get from that, and maybe someday you will,
mm-hmm.
and what you don't get from that, which is what you get when I or one of my colleagues is at a game, or somebody from the Globe or the Herald.
Mm-hmm.
A little tidbit on a play that happened, like AI might not pick up that, you know, a curveball hung. They'll just say they hit a ball.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, you know, we're watching it and we'll be able to tell you, you know, X happened because of Y,
mm-hmm.
you know, and, you know, the runner scored because the runner at first base was stealing second and the second baseman went over to cover and the batter hit the ball through the vacated hole, which doesn't get talked about in an AI story very much. And those are the tidbits I think that readers, viewers, listeners like to know.
Not to mention the human side of the story. I think that can be easily missed. You know, when you're sitting in a sports venue and you're watching the game, you're taking it all in, you get a vibe, right? You feel how things are going. You feel how the fans are reacting to things. How is an AI going to pick up on that? I think that AI
at some point,
is
at some
great.
Point it will.
Yeah.
At some,
you think so?
I think at some point everything does.
Mm.
I mean, I can remember in college getting those computer cards for my classes and then handing them in. And they were like, you know, 3 inches tall by 6 inches wide.
Mm-hmm.
Now you just hit a button on your key. So, so everything changes, you know, and everything advances. And I suspect that probably not in our lifetimes, that AI might be able to do a lot of that stuff.
Mm.
I don't know that because I'm not actively involved in creation.
Kind of shine the crystal
all
ball
that.
A little bit.
But it seems like, you know, you went from tubes to transistors, and you could, you know, and I can remember when you first started to be able to take your radios everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember when FM radios were first put in cars. My first car had an FM converter.
Yeah.
It only had an AM radio.
I actually installed one of those in my family's car one time.
And, you know, but everything changed, you know.
Tell us how old you are without telling us how old you
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I can tell you how old I am because I learned how to drive on a push-button car.
Three on the tree, anyone?
No. We were
push-button. That's very slick.
That's very, yeah. Yeah. That was what Chrysler Corporation did.
Mm.
And I can, you know, I can see two different kinds. My dad had one that had all the gears like in a circle, like on the side. And the one on the car that I drove, it was like up and down. And it had the park thing was a shifter and everything else was a button.
Yeah.
Of course, nowadays nowadays, my youngest has a truck that's bigger than the studio. His gear shift is a knob.
Yes.
Where, you know, you turn it.
Right.
And it's like everything old is new again.
And, you know, we're headed toward getting into a car and just having the car take us there, right?
I don't even want to think about that.
Howard Herman's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM and 88.1 WSBR in Lee. And we kind of got off the rails there for a little while. It's good, though. I like that. Let's go back to high school football, if we can. And I will reference said Berkshire Eagle for today for your colleague, Jesse Kolodkin, mentions all of the realignment, I guess you would call it, of the PVAC, the Pioneer Valley
yes.
Athletic mm-hmm. Conference. So let's start with the football stuff, and I'll just
read. Well, first of all, just know, they do this every couple of years.
Apparently.
You know, they'll reshuffle the decks based on sizes of schools and successes of schools because they don't want high school X to just beat everybody by 80 points.
Yeah. And the last time, big one that happened, I think, was right after COVID, if I remember right.
Which was only like 3-4 years ago. So it's you're more than due.
Yeah. So Jesse says, Pittsfield and Wacona are back in the same league for the first time in years and are joined by Putnam, Agawam, Amherst, and Chicopee Comp in the suburban south. And then Taconic and South Hadley stayed in the suburban north and were joined by Lee and Hoosick, as well as Holyoke and East Hampton. Monument and McCann are in the Tri-County with Smith, Voke, Pathfinder, and now Belchertown. So that's an interesting lineup right there for some of those teams, especially if you think that now you'll see more, PHS, Wacona matchups, right, in the next few years at least. To definitely have one this year. PHS and Taconic will play each other, I heard, in the first week instead of the last week, which
is
unusual.
It becomes a non-league game.
Yeah.
Instead of a league game. You know, you look at it, and they're trying to make everybody, you know, the league's more competitive, and so there's no really, you know, no team that gets beaten up every single week.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
but then it also threw a lot of teams into playing, you know, from Berkshire County, a lot of Pioneer Valley teams, which meant a lot of travel.
We've been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny because, you know, you look at, if you read stuff in other states, they do a lot more traveling than Massachusetts teams do.
Yeah.
In part because of the size of the state. It's mm-hmm. not all that big. But when you think about it, excuse me, it's, you know, the only sport that I'm not bothered by travel is football. And it's the same thing at the college level.
Is that because it's basically once a week?
Well, it's once a week, and it's Friday night or Saturday afternoon mm-hmm. in high school football. In college football, it's basically Saturday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So when people complain that, you know, that USC is in the Big Ten, for football it doesn't matter.
Mm.
Because a team in Los Angeles is getting on an airplane every Friday, as it is.
Going somewhere
mm-hmm. and coming back after the game.
Right.
It's the same thing on a much smaller level in high school football in Massachusetts. Mm. The Wacona football team is getting on a bus Friday afternoon after classes are over and traveling to, say, Agawam for a game.
Yep.
They will come home that night, have the rest of the weekend free.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that big. For football, the travel is not that big of a deal.
Mm.
It becomes a much bigger deal, in my opinion, when you're talking about winter sports and spring sports, where Taconic's getting on a bus on a Tuesday afternoon and going out to West Springfield and then coming back after the game and getting home at midnight.
Yeah, and then going to class
the next day.
And practice that afternoon.
It is the same principle at the college level when USC, for example, again, will play at Michigan on a Wednesday night and then have to fly all the way back to California and maybe go to class.
Mm.
So, you know, and those are the sports where I'm a little more bothered by long travels. Mm-hmm. The football travel is no big deal at all.
Sometimes in college sports, though, they'll have one conference for football and a different conference or a different sort of league in a way for the other sports, right? And they'll have more of a local conference for those sports.
Ideally, that might be the way to go in the future.
Yeah.
Break up football leagues. Make all football leagues, you know, however you want to do them.
Mm-hmm.
So if Alabama and Ohio State want to be in the same league, that's fine. But for basketball, for baseball, for something else, a New England league.
Mm.
You know,
regional.
An Ohio Midwest, an Ohio Pennsylvania Midwest league, something like that.
Yep. Well, I always think of the Big East for basketball, and it was so cool in a lot of ways because it was kind of a tightly knit group of Northeastern schools. You know, the
which
furthest
it is
one
no
away,
longer.
No, it isn't. The furthest one away I think you had at that time was probably Georgetown, right? Could you
initially?
Think of yeah,
initially, and now the Big East goes as far north as Milwaukee and as far west as Omaha, Nebraska.
Hmm. Different, very different. But that is the end. You know, of course, the college sports seem to be driven mostly by the football.
Completely.
That's where the money is.
Completely. And you can blame many people. You can't blame the NCAA on college football because the NCAA has no control over college football. Thanks to maybe 50 years ago, a U.S. Supreme Court decision that allowed the Division I college football programs to sell their own television rights.
So each conference has the right to sell those.
Or they all got together and sold rights as a group instead of the NCAA doing it, which is why you had, which was the slippery slope that has become, you know, 800 football games on every day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it...
Because at one point it was very unusual to be able to see all those games. Like, you would see a couple, three, you know, of the major games in a weekend because, as you mentioned at the beginning, there weren't that many television outlets for you to be able to watch those things. You had three networks that would carry football.
And only one of them carried college football.
Yeah.
And that was ABC.
Yep.
But gradually that started to change once the conferences and college football writ large were able to control their own rights.
Mm-hmm.
So you can complain about the NCAA in a lot of areas. You know, they're trying to screw up the basketball tournament by expanding it and all these other sports. But football is somewhat out of their purview.
Hmm.
So there's not much they can do with it.
Hmm. And, of course, then there's the entire NIL debate, which we've talked about on this show in the past, and it just seems to be heating up more and more every time you come on the show. Some new development has happened, right? And now the president of the United States is somehow getting involved with whether colleges can pay the students as employees and what kind of NIL deals they can make. That seems like a bit of an overreach.
Well, they are employees. You know, we should admit that, first of all, because, you know, but they're also, you know, getting education. I have all, you know.
And it's still an amateur sport.
Well, sort of.
I mean, we still call it that.
Yeah, but what's interesting is when you watch the NCAA basketball tournament, the NCAA runs its own commercials.
Mm.
And one of them that was laughed at a lot is, the NCAA, you know, the students, most of them turn pro in something other than their sport.
Right.
It's true. I mean, it's not true if you're talking about Alabama football, necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're talking about UAlbany football or Siena basketball, most of those guys, even though some of the basketball players may play overseas for a year or two, they're all coming back here someday and getting real jobs.
Yeah,
they're not gonna play 10 years in the NBA and retire and never have to do anything again.
Right.
You know, so it just sounds silly to hear that, but it is true. I mean, you know, we were talking before.
So is it worth it then to pay them while they're the college athletes?
I don't have a
I
don't have a particular problem with it. Even though they're also getting, you know, athletic scholarships and their books paid for and, you know, three squares a day plus whatever training table food they get. I know, you know, like, for example, I know at UMass, you know, the players go back to the Football Performance Center a couple times a day to pick up meals. Joe's student doesn't get a chance to do that. They go to their, you know, cafeteria. They go to, you know, the dining hall in Southwest or whatever and, you know, and do it that way. But
it also changes the dynamics now of what a power school is, right? You think about where the concentration of really good sports teams is going to go and what happens to the sort of lesser schools, the ones that can't compete on that money level, the ones that can't bring in the big donors who can provide the NIL deals, right? I mean, those schools are going to get relegated to some other section, and you're going to just have, you know, your Ohio States and your Notre Dames and your, you know, USC's and Alabama's. That's basically all you're going to see.
And to paraphrase
Michigan,
and to paraphrase William Shakespeare, therein lies the rub.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
And isn't that a poorer experience for everyone?
It's a poorer experience, and B, let's use basketball for example. The best weekend of the NCAA basketball tournament, in the eyes of the majority of us, is that first weekend.
Yeah, it sure is.
When you get the possibility of little guys beating big guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because
really close games that shouldn't be.
Yeah, because once you get to the second weekend, it's pretty much, you know, just the big powerful schools.
Yeah.
And by then it's okay, because you only got 16 teams, you know, you're not playing that many guys.
Mm-hmm.
But that first weekend is the biggest weekend in sports,
yeah,
in my opinion,
mm-hmm,
because it's, you know, who doesn't want to see, you know, Robert Morris upset Kentucky, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It is why I was having this conversation with someone yesterday about something else, and I said, that's why I no longer do a basketball pool.
Yeah, a bracket.
The bracket, you know, for the NCAA tournament.
Mm-hmm.
We used to do it at the Eagle all the time.
Mm.
And I used to, you know, and then one year I was getting ready to go to Salem, Virginia to cover Williams in the Final Four and got busy, you know, arranging my hotel, my rental car, you know, packing and all that, and forgot to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Had the best first weekend ever because I assume you fill one out.
I don't, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you would want to win.
I've done it in the past.
You would want to win, right?
Well, yeah, I suppose. I think I would like to see how it plays out.
But okay,
for sure.
But if you're in one of those things, if you're in one of those pools where you have to pay money,
mm-hmm,
you want to win.
Right.
I found myself rooting against myself because the first weekend of the tournament, I root for chaos.
Mm.
I want to see as many, you know, top seeds lose as can be.
But when you're filling out the bracket,
and you're putting $10 in, you know, to try to win it,
you would never predict those big chaos.
And you don't want, unless you pick them, and then you're rooting for them.
Yeah.
But if you're rooting for them and they don't happen, then you screwed yourself up with that. So I stopped doing it, and have enjoyed the first weekend of the tournament so much more now that I do not do it than when I did.
Do you think the president has any role in correcting or changing any of this, the way it's going? I mean, he's going to interject himself no matter what, but does he really have a role in this?
Technically, I guess not, but there's nothing necessarily wrong with the bully pulpit. I don't know if what President Trump is planning or has talked about is workable, because I haven't really, you know, looked into it at all. But if nothing else, being on the bully pulpit can't hurt. can't necessarily hurt. What he might say could hurt.
Yeah, but depends on what side he's coming
exactly.
down on.
Exactly. But being in that position and having an opinion on something like that is something that isn't necessarily a negative. Yeah.
In the past, it was the bully pulpit. I think now it's more coercion and persuasion and maybe even, pulling some strings that shouldn't have any access to.
Yeah. And you see it every day in what's going on. It was interesting. I was thinking about it when the Trump administration decided to limit colleges from bringing in foreign students. I was wondering particularly about how that might affect college, Division I college hockey teams.
Yeah, or other sports, actually.
Mainly college hockey teams because, certainly half of the players, a lot of the players who play college hockey are Canadians. Mm-hmm. And there are a decent percentage of Europeans who come over and play.
Yep.
Which is different than football and certainly baseball and even basketball, where there are Europeans and people from other countries playing. Hockey is impacted probably more than anybody else on paper. And nothing's happened yet.
Right.
And I remember I was talking to a hockey coach about that. And
the upcoming season hasn't happened.
So far, they're not worried. They'll see, we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Howard Herman's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM. We've got to the top of the hour, and that means we're going to take our break. And we'll come back and talk about more stuff. I want to get into the NFL ESPN deal a little bit and definitely get into some stuff about Wacona Park, which has had some news since the last time that Howard was on the show. So we'll do all that when we come back. Stick around, and Morning Drive will be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Underwriters are so important for keeping this station alive. Hi, this is Sean Sayre, Executive Director of PCTV. I'd like to thank our local businesses for supporting Pittsfield Community Radio and for believing in the mission of the station. When you hear underwriting messages on the air, you know those companies support WTBR-FM. If you're listening now and your business would like to join in and support us, call me today at 445-4234 and get involved, or visit us at WTBRFM.com. It will make all the difference.
Let's take a moment to talk about your wellness. Financial wellness, that is. Plan your meals out in advance and shop for the week. This will deter you from spending more than you planned.
Pay yourself first. Think of your savings like a bill you pay monthly. This way you can be ready when life happens.
This money hack brought to you by your neighbors at Greylock Federal Credit Union. All financial education and coaching resources are free and open to the public. Greylock Federal Credit Union, insured by NCUA.
Hey, this is Mike Pezzo. Remember those tunes your parents told you to turn down? Better yet, remember those tunes your grandparents told your parents to turn down? Well, on Mike's Amazing Music and Oldies show, you'll hear sometimes oldies, sometimes blues, sometimes local performers, and a lot of rock on Berkshire County's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, Thursdays at noon. Tune in and be entertained and educated.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at Sondrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back. WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR Lee, watching us on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301, and of course on PCTV Select. And we have Howard Herman on the show this morning, a great conversation going on. Lots more to talk about with Howard after the weather forecast, which we will do right now. Here it goes. Berkshire
Weather. WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, patchy fog this morning. Mostly sunny with isolated showers. Isolated thunderstorms this afternoon. Some thunderstorms may produce heavy rainfall this afternoon. Hot with highs in the upper 80s. Northwest wind around 5 miles per hour. Chance of rain 20%. Tonight, mostly clear. Lows around 60. North wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, sunny, hot with highs in the mid 80s. East wind around 5 miles per hour. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
So now they're talking about maybe a 20% chance of rain, thunderstorms this afternoon. I was originally hearing that today was going to be the wet day, but we'll see. We did have a little bit of rain yesterday as well.
Had a nice thunderstorm yesterday.
We did, yeah. Yeah, kind of unexpected there. Heard that rumbling.
I saw. You know, I was in my den doing some work, and I could see it get dark out the window.
Yeah.
The one thing I can't tell from there is because of the screen is whether or not it is in fact raining.
Well, we can hear it here on the roof at PCTV and WTBR-FM.
Is it a metal roof?
It's a metal roof, yeah. And even though we've got some insulation up there, if you get a pretty good pounding of rain, it's hard to ignore it. Yeah, for sure. So, Howard Herman, let's talk about the NFL and ESPN real briefly here. That was an interesting development where the NFL, if I remember correctly, is going to get a 10% share of ESPN. And in exchange for that, ESPN is going to get the linear rights to the Red Zone channel, right? And they're going to get some other benefits from that partnership. What does that do both for the NFL and for media coverage of the NFL?
I think, for the NFL, it gives them cost certainty. Mm. And it means they don't have to spend, you know, somebody else will be spending some of that NFL network money that they use. Let me just say that, first of all,
the NFL owns the NFL network.
Yeah, first of all of the networks that are owned by sports leagues, NBA TV, the NHL Network, which I don't get to watch because it's not in my package. Mm-hmm. Are you hearing that, Spectrum? It's not in my package and I need it next year.
I'm sure they'll sell it to you for a very nice price.
Yeah. But if you watch primarily the NFL Network and MLB Network, they're pretty straight down the middle. Mm. They aren't the PR arms of their respective leagues. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of criticism on the NFL Network of players and coaches and teams. Mm. And the same thing on the MLB Network. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in my opinion, that's not a big problem. I think when a quote-unquote journalistic entity, and ESPN isn't really a journalist, it's a television network that does news, that does sports news, but also provides, you know, entertainment programming.
Right, and of course also owes a lot to the leagues that it covers because of the contracts that it gets with those leagues.
It does, and the leagues owe a lot to them because certainly...
But that's why you wouldn't hear a lot of the criticism that you might expect, right? You're only going to hear that on the sports podcast and sports radio and things like that.
If you watch SportsCenter, you watch the NFL, the NFL lives and the NBA lives. There's plenty of criticism. Hmm. I thought there was an interesting point made, and I cannot remember if it was. It was by a guy who's been involved in the broadcasting and the coverage of UFC.
Mm-hmm.
And ESPN just lost the UFC contract. Or it was bought out by Paramount and CBS.
And that's a big money maker.
And that's a big money thing.
Mm-hmm.
But what this person, and I don't remember if it was a writer who covers it or if it was Joe Rogan who does a lot of the TV, said, the problem becomes that when ESPN doesn't have a piece of you, it ignores you.
Mm-hmm.
And will that happen? You know, will UFC be off of the ESPN screens, even on SportsCenter newscasts?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point, because if you pay attention, the amount, there was, for years, there was no hockey talk on ESPN until they got the rights back.
Mm-hmm.
And
really, ESPN is now pretty much all about NFL and NBA, right?
Pretty much, although they have this big NHL contract that is huge for them, you know, financially.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, that's the point that this guy was making, that, you know, that by going to Paramount, ESPN can completely ignore you.
Mm.
And he is afraid that will happen. And if that happens, how does that impact what they televise?
Yeah.
And what the response is to UFC events, you know, nationwide.
Another interesting thing about the NFL and ESPN deal was that the NFL is actually retaining the rights to the Red Zone network itself, like the licensing of it and the concept of it. They're just leasing the linear rights to ESPN, right?
Which is somewhat similar to...
Linear meaning like the live.
Yeah, which is somewhat similar to what ESPN is now doing with the Inside the NBA show that is still being produced in Atlanta by Turner.
Right.
Now that Turner lost NBA rights, which of course was the saddest day because they do basketball far better than ESPN does.
Mm.
Although the only good thing about it is NBC is now in the mix and, you know, Round Ball Rock comes back. but
John Tesh.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you've ever heard him tell the story as to how he wrote it, it's really, really funny.
Yeah, talk about a moneymaker, too, for John Tesh.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
not bad.
He dictated notes onto his answering machine at home. Because he got some, he was doing a contest. He called his home phone and went ba ba da ba 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 ba, and then the next thing you know, he's writing it, and it's the basketball theme song. But you know, when Turner lost its share of the NBA rights, ESPN purchased the rights to Inside the NBA. So it's still going to be, you know, Ernie Johnson and Shaq and Kenny Smith and Charles.
Hmm.
You know,
I thought Charles was dropping out.
No, he's going to stay. He's staying with them.
Okay.
He's not doing anything else.
Gotcha.
For ESPN.
Yeah.
But he is staying. He's staying with that show.
Hmm.
Which is the best sports show on television.
Yeah.
And nothing else. And that's somewhat similar to ESPN and the Red Zone.
Yeah, and then there's the whole streaming concept, right? Is that more and more NFL games seem to be making their way to streaming-only platforms, sending exclusive games to Amazon and Netflix. That's a trend I think you're going to see probably more of in the coming years. And what does that mean for ordinary folks that want to watch NFL games over the air on networks for free?
You have to start paying for them.
Mm.
It's pretty simple. You know, money talks, nobody walks.
Mm.
And it's unfortunate that it's happening, but, you know, it is the wave of the future. It is interesting.
Like, you have to pay for a whole bunch of different stuff to get all the games.
It's interesting. Yeah, and now they're starting to bundle them all.
Mm.
And we used to call that cable.
Yeah, remember that.
Yeah.
What a concept.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting... I see on social media, like, I don't know if it was last Friday or the Friday before that, the Red Sox were on Apple TV
mm-hmm.
because Apple TV has a contract with Major League Baseball to do a Friday night game.
Right.
And Roku has a contract with Major League Baseball to televise a Sunday morning game that is not on your regular, you know, and people say, and I saw people writing, I pay for Nesson and I can't watch this game. Well, welcome to the brave new world of streaming.
And that is it, especially Red Sox, right? And that's kind of a nice transition to the Red Sox discussion. Here we are, middle of August. Usually the Red Sox experience a summer swoon. We're used to that, right? If you're a Red Sox fan, you get your hopes up during the season, and then something terrible happens in the late August into September, and playoff hopes are dashed. So far, the Red Sox, I think, are a surprisingly good team. I looked at them early in the season, and I said, this is not a playoff team. And now I think I'm starting to eat my words. What do you think?
I think they've been a playoff team since day one. Mm. Having said that, I didn't know if they'd make it.
Yeah.
But they have been good, and they have been really, really lucky. And I mean lucky in the sense of, if you look at the American League East, stinks.
Mm. The and Yankees, you would have thought the Yankees would have taken it.
You would have thought, but you would have thought, you know, the team that the two teams that have been the most disappointing have been Baltimore and Tampa Bay.
Yeah, because I think
when I was here in April or so,
yeah,
we talked about them as that the Red Sox could have a good season,
right,
and not make the playoffs because they couldn't jump four teams.
I was thinking middle of the pack. Coming in third in the American League East.
I'm not even sure I thought about that, but I thought they'd have a good enough season to make it, but there were teams ahead of them that were going to keep them out.
Yeah.
Obviously, that has not happened.
Right. That's why they play the game, as they say, right?
That's why we don't stick everything into a... Because if we stuck everything into a computer, they'd probably be in fifth place.
That's why I don't think AI is going to take over the world. I don't think they could have predicted it.
I don't. You're probably right. You are probably right about that, my guy. But they've been, they've played well. I'm not 100% sure they did enough at the trade deadline, although I'm not as critical of them as other people.
Picked up a couple of pitchers. Right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And not really this year pitchers, it feels like.
Right? Well, no, they picked up guys that they hope, will be flex tape guys at the back of the rotation and the middle of the bullpen.
They get to expand the roster later in the season.
They don't do that. That does not exist anymore.
Mm.
There's no more calling up 40 guys in September. At least I don't think so.
No.
They changed that rule a couple of years ago, but they're. I don't. They're pretty well set. With everything, the only concern I have is Navarez, the catcher's been hurt.
Yeah,
and if he can't play down the stretch, the other catchers aren't very good.
No, and he was really good.
Yeah,
yeah, really good.
And and I'm sure that Yankee general manager Brian Cashman is going, why did we get rid? That's the one thing the Yankees have been very good at is developing young catchers.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a bunch of them, have been on a lot of different teams, and they've always been ended up having solid major league careers.
Yeah. Yeah, you could think of a lot of big Yankee catchers, right? I think of Thurman Munson.
Well, I'm thinking more recently. I'm thinking of guys like Gary Sanchez, Francisco Cervelli, Russell Martin, all former Yankee catchers who went on and had solid, tenures with other major league teams. Mm. Very recently, and didn't finish out their careers, in the Bronx. Mm.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So here we are coming into the stretch, if you will, for the end of the baseball season. And I think a lot of people will be focused on that. And I think it feels like Red Sox are going to be in the playoffs. I think they're going to pick up at least one of those wild card spots.
Yeah, it seems like...
Blue Jays maybe lock up the American League East.
And... As well, they should. Mm-hmm. They've been really good all year, and the Red Sox will likely be a wild card team.
Mm-hmm.
There's still way too much time between now and the end of September to say that for certain.
That's a lot of games.
There are a lot. There are a lot of games, and this last part is, as you know, as the late Art Fleming used to say on like on the game show Jeopardy. It's time for Double Jeopardy, where the questions get tougher and the scores can really change. And that's the same thing down the stretch in baseball. Each game gets tougher, and the results can really change. And you can go from second place to fifth place in a week.
Do you think that the Rafael Devers trade was like a Garcia Parra trade? Do you feel like it was something like that, where getting him off the roster lit the spark that lit the flame?
You know, to some extent, but I think that is undervaluing the Garcia Parra trade. Because if they don't make that trade, they don't get Orlando Cabrera. And Orlando Cabrera was the best defensive shortstop in the American League that year. And if they don't have him, they don't win at all. That's the, you know, and so far, the guys the Red Sox got in that trade haven't really done any. So, you know, to the extent that it was addition by subtraction, I'll buy that, although it's kind of hard to subtract a guy with that kind of bat. But it's not the same because, you know, those, because the Garcia Parra trade led to Cabrera and Doug Minkiewicz both coming to Boston.
Sometimes it's about how it feels in the clubhouse, though.
Yes. But both of those guys were, you know, solid major league players. And like I said before, Cabrera, you know, really, you know, solidified that infield. People, you know, I always liked Garcia Parra, and I used to say, what I used to feel like, you know, Nomar's problem was always he could get to everything, but sometimes he made he threw the ball away and stuff like that. Whereas Derek Jeter, who was his main rival, did not have anywhere near the range that Garcia Parra had, but he got to everything he could get to and didn't make mistakes. That was the difference to me between the two of them. And, you know, and getting rid of Garcia Parra helped them on the field, off the field. I think it helped them more on the field.
And you couldn't even imagine the Yankees ever getting rid of Derek Jeter, which would be the difference, right?
No, not at all.
Howard Herman's my guest here this morning on Morning Drive, and can't let the show go without talking about some Wacona Park. Right back here in Pittsfield. And some news that's hit since the last time you were on the show was that the Parks Department now has ordered the demolition of the old grandstand as part of the project. You see that as a positive or a negative step?
I hope it's a positive step. I hope it doesn't end up being they tear it down and nothing ever happens. And it becomes, you know, like just a big open space.
Like a Deming or a...
Well, no. I mean, the other parks are, you know, they all have different things, you know, but...
Clap Park.
Although Clap Park has, you know, has its own, you know, everybody, you know, they did a renovation of Clap.
Very nice, actually.
Yes, it is, in fact, very nice.
Yeah.
Hopefully, and Mayor Marchetti mentioned, I talked to him last week for the column I wrote last weekend, and he said... He's hoping that by 2027 they'll have something done.
Yep.
My feeling is that the Park Commission wanted to kick the city in the tush. Say, let's get going. You know, we're going to do this now. So now we go from there.
Well, either way, that grandstand will be coming down, right? If it's condemned, it can't be occupied.
It could stay up there forever and nobody ever use it and all of that, but. Yeah. But
it just becomes a liability at that point.
Yeah, but this way, by it coming down, I think it potentially cajoles the administration and city government into doing something. I don't know that for sure, but you know, to me, it seems like the logical next step.
Mm-hmm. And of course, they'll have to do a couple of things on the infrastructure side. You have all the lights that are there. Those aren't coming down. So you'll need some sort of a building where the electrical stuff can live, essentially, to be able to turn things on and off. They said they're going to build that. Probably have to put up some kind of a backstop and some fencing and things in the interim, at least to be able to play. Because as we saw this year, the Babe Ruth tournament came, the regional New England tournament came, the 13U. And that was all played at Wacona Park. Certainly, in order to do that, you need some sort of basic things, right, to be able to use the field as a as an active baseball field.
Oh, more than just basic thing. You know, yeah, the electricity probably is the most important.
Yeah.
And even if you decide you don't want to ever play night games, mm-hmm. you know, you still have a scoreboard, you still have other things.
Sure.
You still have the plumbing and, you know, in the bathrooms and all of that.
Mm.
Although there won't be
away.
Any bathrooms anymore because I'll be tearing down the grandstand.
Right.
So that, so, you know, scratch that. But I've said this before. I've written this before. I look around and I see, you know, and $28 million is not, you know, is not change you find in your couch.
If only.
I get that.
Yeah.
But as projects like this go, it's really inexpensive.
Mm.
And I know that sounds silly to say inexpensive when you're talking about multi-millions of dollars. But there was a high school in suburban Atlanta that just opened a $65 million football stadium.
High school.
High school football stadium.
Amazing.
10,000-seat stadium.
Yeah. Priorities.
Yeah, exactly, mm-hmm. exactly. But as I wrote in a story at the beginning of the week, you know, the Pittsfield Suns who played there are still committed to playing there,
which is great news for Pittsfield.
Yes,
I think.
Of course, they have to have some place to play.
Sure.
And if they don't have any place to play, they won't play, and you know, and
mm-hmm.
all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're still actually members in good standing of the league. They still pay their dues and all mm-hmm. of that. But hopefully, if they can get it torn down quickly.
Mm-hmm. Which sounds like it will happen in
yeah,
October.
And I think, and mm-hmm. I just, and my feeling is, you go, you move ahead regardless of, you know, what the cost is.
Yeah.
And then you pay yourself back.
Yeah, and it should be able to leverage more for the city. It shouldn't just be the money that goes into that project for one purpose, right? And that's kind of what was discussed about this. Could you use the field for other things? That's the conversation about maybe putting field turf in instead of grass, because then it's more resilient and you can get to practice quicker and the field doesn't get inundated with the water. The drainage is better. There's lots of things like that.
A lot of that, and then you read the story about the portable ice rink.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
which I think would be better served at Wacona Park than at Clapp Park.
Yeah,
because there's more parking and all of that, mm-hmm. and it would the field would survive better if it were turf.
Yeah.
with a rink on top. Of
sure,
it.
Seems like it. Other challenges at Wacona Park, obviously the parking lot. That's a big deal. And the flooding and things like that have happened at that site. And, you know, that was all considered. I don't think we've heard the end of those discussions. I think that will only intensify. But I think there are people that are worried, as you sort of intimated there, that, you know, if you knock the grandstand down, which you have to do at some point, maybe the ghosts of urban renewal come back and you say, well, you wiped all this stuff out so that you could build something new. And then decades go by and nothing gets built.
Well, yeah. But then again, it's different because, and I don't know this because I wasn't here, but I know urban renewal in other communities, a lot of the buildings that were taken down were not blighted, were not, you know, condemned,
no.
so to speak.
Yep. They were just out of date.
Yeah, whereas Wacona Park has been deemed unsafe.
Right.
The grandstand.
Yep.
So
nothing you can do about that.
No, and you could fix it up the way it is.
Mm.
Be just as expensive as building new.
Absolutely.
And you might as well build new and give people a, you know, a better production.
Yeah. And going to be lots more to talk about on that front. And I'm sure that we'll have you back on the show. And we'll talk more the next time something happens with Wakona Park, which it does seem to happen in bunches like that, doesn't it?
It's feast or famine with that.
Yeah, it is. I think we'd all like to see something happen. Everybody would like to have that as a crown jewel in the city. Well, Howard Herman, thank you.
Well,
thanks for being here this
always
morning.
Always a pleasure.
Utility infielder for Morning Drive here, Howard Herman. And we'll talk to you again soon. Have a good long day. Sounds like you're going to have one, and me too. All right, take care, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Just get in my car.